The book is called Sacred Liberty, America's Long, Bloody, and Ongoing Struggle for Religious Freedom. We have the author joining us today, journalist and best-selling author Stephen Waldman. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about this book, Sacred Liberty. We think about religious freedom in America, but I guess it's been a long-going struggle, and even things that we think today might be true of how things are happening currently, we have to kind of put things into context. How far back do you want to go to kind of understand religious freedom in America? How far back do we go?
Well, we go back to the very beginning of the founding of the country. And, you know, the truth is the first few hundred years of the settling of this America was a kind of series of failed experiments in religious freedom. We really didn't have it for the most part. You know, we think we did because we were told that, you know, the Puritans came here, the Pilgrims came here seeking religious freedom. That's not really quite right. They wanted freedom for themselves, but they were not really interested in giving that to other people. So, you know, the Puritans who were harassed or persecuted in Europe came over here and then were hanging Quakers from trees in Boston for the, you know, the crime of being a Quaker. And so, and then you had, in less graphic form, you had the colonies kind of taking the European approach where they would tax their citizens in order to pay the salaries of the local ministers. That's what a local establishment, if you hear that phrase, meant. So for a long, long time, we really didn't have religious freedom in any serious way. And then starting with the Constitution and the First Amendment, we started to move in the right direction. But it was a pretty bloody struggle, and it took hundreds of years for this to play out. You know, in the 19th century, you had really brutal attacks on Catholics and Mormons. And the Mormons was sort of, I honestly didn't realize, even going into this, the severity of it. There was a point where the governor of Missouri issued a formal edict calling for the extermination of the Mormons in Missouri. And, you know, a few days later, there was a massacre of a Mormon community in Missouri. So there really was, you know, at that point, our notions of religious freedom were kind of shallow. Like, we wanted it for people who were kind of like us. But when you had a religion that was, like, kind of outside the mainstream, like Mormonism was, we really didn't have much tolerance for it. So, you know, it took a lot of really heroic efforts by regular Americans, Catholics in the 19th century. A lot of the fights were Catholics demanding rights from what they considered a kind of oppressive Protestant majority. Like Protestants were requiring Catholic school children to read the King James translation of the Bible, and Catholics rebelled. It took a lot of fight, and then I think the real turning point was around World War II, when that was really the moment when we decided as a country that this broader notion of religious freedom was something that was great about America, and it was really because we were fighting Hitler, we were fighting fascists and communists, and it kind of dawned on all of us that this kind of more inclusive notion of religious freedom was really one of the things that distinguished us from the rest of the world, especially then, and something that we should unify around.
We're talking today with Stephen Waldman. The book is called Sacred Liberty, America's Long, Bloody, and Ongoing Struggle for Religious Freedom. That kind of puts it really into context. Still going on, in a sense, but before we get into that, let's take us back to James Madison, a person you who say kind of really put what we have today maybe down on paper, or at least kind of put that idea forth. How did that happen?
Yeah, I think Thomas Jefferson maybe has a better PR agent than James Madison because he seems to get all the credit for it. But it was really Madison. Madison's key here because he has this very counterintuitive idea, which is the best way to help religion is to leave it alone. And we kind of take that for granted now, but that was actually a pretty revolutionary idea. Back then, if you wanted to help religion, the government should get in there and help religion and tax people and pay the minister's salaries and pick a religion that we're going to support as a state. So he said that's crazy, and we have, you know, a couple thousand years of experience now to see that that doesn't work very well. And he had experienced something very personally himself, which was there was this massive wave of persecution of Baptists, who we now might call evangelical Christians, in Virginia, like basically in Madison's backyard when he was a young man. And about half the Baptist ministers were put in jail for the crime of preaching. So he had a very vivid sense. He didn't have to look at European history. It was like it was happening right there. And that was part of what influenced him. Now, the other thing about Madison's view on this that I was really not understood, he had a second part of this, which is he actually didn't have that much confidence that the First Amendment was going to do much. He said the real way for us to preserve religious freedom was, he used this kind of antiquated term, multiplicity of sects, S-E-C-T-S, not S-E-X. And it was basically, he meant, if you have a lot of different religions, then no one religion will get enough power to gang up and oppress the other religions. So he actually wanted fragmentation. He wanted there to be lots of denominations kind of competing with each other in a free market of religion. And he thought that was going to be the way for to have religious freedom. And I think he's right. I think that kind of the history of America has kind of proven that out.
Let's talk a little bit about today, where we look at religious freedom. Sometimes people, you know, we have that separation of church and state. I mean, that's kind of the line that's sort of drawn.
Right.
There's a lot of people that are practicing different. Is there mentioned in here? You said 360,000 different houses of worship. So there, and
yeah,
and there's a lot of different variations on that. What is the climate today related to religious freedom in here? And how do we look at in context today related to things in the past so that it helps better to understand what's going on?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a little bit of a best of times, worst of times situation right now. In a lot of ways, we're more advanced in our notions of religious freedom than we've ever been before. So we've gone well beyond saying, you know, you shouldn't have persecution to saying we should bend over backwards to allow different religions to, you know, practice their faith. You know, even in public as well as in private, and there's all sorts of legal protections for things like that. The scary part is that in the kind of attacks on American Muslims in recent years have sort of crossed the line, in my opinion, from being a very legitimate concern about Islamic terrorism toward being an attack, a kind of broader attack on American Muslim religious rights. So, for instance, there's lots of communities that have tried to block the construction of mosques, or, you know, there was a poll a couple of years ago that said only half of Republicans were willing to say that Islam should be legal in America. So, you know, you start to see this erosion of the rights that, you know, were fought for in other places. And that's obviously bad for Muslims, but I think it's also bad for everyone else because it means that the consensus around religious freedom is eroding and is more fragile than, you know, than perhaps we thought.
Many times we think about religion as sort of in a broad sense, but religion is just the people who are a part of that particular
right.
belief. In your mm-hmm. book, can you share a little bit of stories maybe of some individuals who we see the struggles that they've had that kind of brought us to where we are today? Who are some of the people that you follow in this book?
Yeah, it's a great question because that's in some ways is some of the most inspiring part of this is that we have been brought to where we are through really heroic efforts by regular people, many not famous. You know, Mary Dyer is the name of a woman who's a Quaker woman who was basically told that, you know, it's illegal to be a Quaker here in Massachusetts. This is during pre-revolutionary times. And she just kept coming back anyway and was hanged for the crime of being a Quaker. Or you have you know, Catholic school children in the 1830s and 1840s who basically were told that they had to read the what they considered the Protestant translation of the Bible in school, and they refused, and they were sometimes beaten and expelled. But, you know, fighting for their religious rights. And Mormons who were, you know, really brutally attacked in the throughout the 1800s, you know, there was an edict from the governor of Missouri calling for the extermination of Mormons. Was shocking and led to a massacre, but Mormons kind of persisted. And each one of these fights, you know, kind of pushed the ball forward in terms of religious freedom. And then there's some more famous people. I mean, I think that the presidents of the World War II era, Roosevelt, Truman, and Eisenhower, were really important. That was kind of the moment when we all decided that religious freedom was something that could unify the country and was made us exceptional. And I actually probably... maybe the most surprising one is that I actually said that George W. Bush played a kind of heroic role in the period right after 9/11, when he set a very tolerant tone and a very shrewd way of slicing how to think about, you know, having a war on Islamic terrorism on the one hand while protecting the rights of American Muslims on the other hand.
It's where we have to worry about painting with a broad brush on certain things, individuals or certain portions or people that claim to be following a certain religion. You can't assign that to everybody, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And that was true throughout American history. Catholics and Mormons tended to get painted with a broad brush. Whatever the worst example of the, you know, whatever the Pope was doing got ascribed to regular American Catholics.
Well, we end up with stereotypes of religion and religious people as well, which doesn't serve us well if we kind of, you know, follow in that era. One of the things I saw in here, you talk about religious freedom is good for the economy. How does that play out?
Well, yeah, that was a weird conclusion, right? Because this is actually something that Madison believed way back. He sort of looked at Philadelphia. He said he had Philadelphia envy. He looked at Philadelphia and he thought they've got all, that was like the one place in the colonies they really had a lot of religious freedom. And they also were just very robust. They had a great economy and lots of businesses and libraries and civic institutions. And Madison thought these were all connected, that, you know, if you have religious freedom, you have freedom. And you will have more different types of people. You'll have more creativity. And so that was just Madison theory. But then a couple of years ago, a bunch of academics in modern times did this really rigorous study where they looked throughout the world at countries that had religious freedom. And then they looked at what their economies were like. And they basically kind of came to the same conclusion that Madison had a few hundred years earlier, that, yeah, actually, it turns out that it leads to more freedom in general and to better economic conditions as a result.
Well, you talk about in there about sort of you can take people, certain things away from people, but taking away a religion from them is a belief of who they are or why they exist.
Yeah, it's really profound. You know, it's when we talk about, you know, this country being premised on the pursuit of happiness. Well, for a lot of people, that means the pursuit of meaning. And religion and faith and spirituality is such an important part of that. We kind of take it for granted now that we have, you know, really do have the freedom to pursue that. But that wasn't always so. And it took the sacrifices of a lot of people to get us to have that kind of freedom that in some ways is more important in our daily lives. Or for a lot of people it is, than, you know, a lot of the other political things that we think about.
You mentioned at the beginning how they were talking about, and Madison said about leaving religion alone, I guess it is. Why does it become such a topic then all the time? Why does that become something that almost becomes like when you, to make a decision, there's always that part that's brought up related
yeah.
to a politician or of a topic or something like that?
Well, it's a great question. I think two reasons. One is that when you think about it, it's kind of counter to human nature to take that, to take Madison's position, in the sense that if you believe that you as a religious person have found the truth, it feels horrible to say, well, those other religions should just get to do whatever they want. No, because that's they're dangerous. You know, if you feel like your way is a better way, it's asking a lot to people to say, have a kind of live and let live attitude. So people, the more common, like the first instinct in some ways is, well, this religion is good. It's good for me. It's good for the country. We should promote it. So that's like, in a way, it's a more natural impulse. And to say, no, that's going to backfire. You know, if you think that's a good idea, but actually you'll end up with less religious freedom that way. The other thing that's happened that has made a lot of these controversies kind of keep coming back and back and back is we used to have this notion that religious freedom meant, like, not having persecution. And that was sort of the first 100 years or so. That's kind of as far as we got. But then in the 20th century, we sort of added to the definition of religious freedom and said, actually, we're going to go farther than that. We're going to say that we as a society should bend over backwards to give people freedom to practice, live their life according to their faith, even in public ways. So one of the big Supreme Court cases about this involved Seventh-day Adventists. And basically, they were saying we shouldn't be forced to work on Saturdays because that's our Sabbath. And the state, South Carolina, said, well, we're not picking on Seventh-day Adventists, but we just, you know, everyone else works on Saturdays. That's the rule. And the court said, yeah, but sometimes secular laws have an unintended side effect that hurts religion. And that's not right. We should bend over backwards to give people the ability to do that. So they said, okay, Seventh-day Adventists don't have to work on Saturdays. So it sounds like a concept that we all could agree with, but it leads to difficult places. It means that you're constantly having these debates over when to give people exemptions from laws in order to provide them with more freedom. So, like, some of the big modern controversies, like, you may remember the case with a group of nuns suing over Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act because it had a coverage for contraception. And they were saying, you know, that's infringing on our religious rights because we don't believe in contraception and we shouldn't be forced to be in a system that does that. So a lot of the modern controversies are really kind of gray area cases. People are very passionate about them, but I think a little bit of perspective is to say, you know, we've come a long way. This is really not the equivalent of hanging people from trees in Boston Commons, but it means that you get into these very granular, difficult debates over when religions should be exempted or religious people should be exempted from having to follow certain laws. And those are just really, really controversial hot button topics.
The book is called Sacred Liberty, America's Long, Bloody, and Ongoing Struggle for Religious Freedom. Our guest is Stephen Waldman, a journalist, entrepreneur, also co-founder of BeliefNet, an award-winning multi-faith website. We appreciate your time. If people want to find out more, where's a good place to get in touch with you or find out more about this story in the book?
Well, of course, if you have a local bookstore, check it out. I know not everyone does anymore, but of course, it's online and Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and all that. I have a website called sacredliberty.us that you can also explore that has lots of other interesting materials and photos and things like that about religious freedom.
Sounds great. Stephen, we appreciate your time this morning sharing this information. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.